I'm Brian Primack from the University of Pittsburgh, and I'd like to start by acknowledging and thanking my funding sources, including the National Cancer Institute, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and the Maurice Falk Foundation in Pittsburgh. I'd also like to acknowledge the many people that have worked on this with me. You all have probably seen people with earbuds around. You may not know that adolescents now listen to music around 2.4 hours per day. This is data from 2005 from the Kaiser Family Foundation study. There are few limits to use. 98% of adolescents have a CD or MP3 player in their house and 86% in their bedroom, and there is some indication that these figures have even risen since 2005. Adolescents link music very strongly to their identity. When Kurt Cobain committed suicide in the mid-90s, there were a number of copycat suicides, and this was attributed to the fact that they had such a strong link in their identity to this music. Music are deeply embedded in the lives of adolescents, and adolescents even link their own, specifically drug use, to that of musicians when they discuss it. There have been other content analyses, and good ones, done of popular music. In particular, a group funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Roberts, Christensen, and Henriksen, in the mid-90s. They actually published these in 99 through 2001, but they looked at music from the mid-90s, and they looked at 1,000 popular songs and found that 18% referenced illicit drugs, 17% referenced alcohol, 3% tobacco. They also looked at popular music videos and saw that there were a number of substances of abuse, and that marijuana was the most frequent illicit drug represented. But there are some holes in the literature. Mostly, we need to look at recent songs and artists, because popular music has been changing extremely rapidly. Additionally, those prior reports were not published in the peer-reviewed medical literature, and so that would be an addition to this work. And then finally, because of the work that they did, we're able to base our ideas and theories on them, and then go even beyond that and create an even more comprehensive theory-based content analysis that includes various contextual elements of songs, the motivations behind use of substances, associations with use, and consequences of use, instead of just which was something that they started, but that we're able to expand upon. So the purpose of the study was to perform a comprehensive content analysis of contemporary popular music, focusing on elements related to substances of abuse, including motivations, associations, and consequences related to those behaviors, and comparing across song characteristics, particularly genre. Genre is extremely important. Genre is very much about identity. And beyond that, if you understand about what goes on in genre, you actually have some ideas for intervention. If you know that in a particular genre there is a particular public health problem, well, you can go to those radio stations and you can intervene. You can choose a spokesperson who represents that genre for your public health idea. So this is important in health communication. So what we did was we looked to Billboard magazine to provide us with the most popular songs of 2005. They have a proprietary algorithm, but the important thing is that it is outstanding. They integrate data from sales and airplay. They get 90% of the U.S. music market. They include, internet sales and downloads in addition to music stores. And so this was the perfect place to look at exposure, which is what we really wanted to know. Which songs are adolescents exposed to? In all, they reported 465 non-unique songs representing the universe of popular music. And since some of those were on many different charts, there were 279 unique songs that evenly represented the various genres. These are the genres that Billboard magazine specifically referred to. And you'll notice that, for example, they separate rap and R&B hip-hop. And you might, personally not think that that is very different, but they know that these are very different markets, and you'll see that in our study. We had to, because this kind of work is subjective on some level, we needed to have a very rigorous coding protocol. We had two initial coders each analyze all 279 songs for about 50 variables that I'm going to show you in a minute. We computed percent agreement and Cohen's Kappa scores to make sure that they agreed. They did agree quite well. However, we wanted to go a step further, and we actually got two confirmatory coders to analyze all the codes that the other two did not agree upon, just to make absolutely sure. They were blind to what the first coder said, and then that rigorous methodology enabled us to really nail down a code that we felt really good about, even when there was some initial disagreement. We wanted to look at substance use, but we also wanted to separate out use from other things that might be not quite use, but still mentioning the name. So, for example, figurative use, which we're going to see in a moment. We wanted to look for tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, many other different substances. We looked for all of these separately, but we ended up lumping them together in the final analysis. And then an important category, non-specific references to substances of abuse or use. So this is an example of a lyric that would be coded as use. I can see the coke in your nose, so that you can say that this is actually, substance use. They light their spliffs, which is known to be, a reference to marijuana. But this would be coded as a figurative use only. Taking you higher, this cat at the wit and the charm, taking you higher like a syringe hitting your arm. We did not want to code that as use. So we separated that very specifically into our figurative only non-use category, but still referring to substance use in a way. Here you can see three non-specific references. I got the product, smoking like a muffler. Well, we don't know what you're smoking. Is this tobacco? Is this marijuana? Coders couldn't decide, so they made this non-specific. On the grind is a common term for being high, but we don't know what from. But buds and haze are very specific for marijuana. Narcotics clearly was in our opiate category. So this is what they ended up doing. In addition, every single song that had substance use, they had to say what motivated it. Yes or no? Peer and social pressure, sex, mood management, financial reasons, motivations, addiction and craving, and we got all of these from prior research as well as focus groups that we did with adolescents. So here's an example of alcohol use that is and tobacco use motivated by mood management. Billy's at the bar. He's been there all night. First 10 beers he's had since her goodbye. She left him broke in his new truck. He don't smoke, but he lights one up. So the bottom line is this is clearly, according to our coders, his motivation for using these substances is managing his mood. We also looked at associations with use. Was every time there was substance use, was it associated with violence, sex, humor, partying, dealing, trafficking, a specific brand reference, operation of a vehicle, anti-use messages, refusal to use, and limit setting? So this would be alcohol associated with violence. I had one more shot, then I winked a boy at the end of the bar. I must have gone a little too far because a big old girl walked out of the blue, stepped right up and knocked out my tooth. So the coders decided that this was violence that was associated with the alcohol use. Here is an example of alcohol and marijuana use being associated with sex. Here's an example of marijuana use associated with operating a vehicle. And as we're going to see, these were quite common. We also looked for every episode of substance use at the consequences of use. And they had to judge each of these seven domains. They had to say, were the mental consequences of use negative, neutral, or positive? Were the emotional consequences negative, neutral, or positive? Were the physical consequences, etc., etc.? So this is an example of positive sexual consequences coded by our coders. Ain't it just like one of us to pick up the phone and call after a couple of drinks? Somewhere in the conversation, an old familiar invitation arrives. I may hate myself in the morning, but I'm going to love you tonight. Here's an example of negative physical consequences. I drank myself to sleep, and Sunday I never woke up. I don't really know what happened in this song, but the coders said, you know, this was a negative physical consequence, and they all agreed on that. Negative legal consequences. They throw us in jail, got us under surveillance, they lock us in cages. The analysis was not fancy. We did chi-square tests to compare substance use outcomes by genre, as well as to compare motivations for associations with and consequences of substance use across the different genres. And what we found is that 33% of the 279 songs had some use. When you look at any reference, including figurative use, as I mentioned before, then it's actually 41.5%. Tobacco, only 2.9% of songs referred to tobacco. But for alcohol, it was 23.7%. For marijuana, it was 13.6%, etc. Explicit use was seen much more in rap than any other category, with about 77%. Country was number two at 37%. And rhythm, blues, and hip-hop was next at 20%. And you can see here, look at the difference between rhythm, blues, hip-hop, and rap. You can see that they really are different markets. Alcohol was most commonly in rap, around 53%. Very high in country, around 33%. Marijuana, though, look at the country line, much lower. Almost no marijuana in country, but about equivalent in rap to alcohol, 53%. When you look at motivations for use, almost 50% of the time that you saw some kind of substance use, it was motivated by pure social pressure. Next most commonly, sex. Next most commonly, financial. Then mood management, and then addiction and craving. Obviously, this is very different than what we see in real life in our practices. Rap was substance use was motivated by about equally pure social pressure, sex, and financial motives. But rock, you can see, has a totally different pattern, often for mood management, sometimes for addiction and craving. Most genres were had substance use that was associated with partying, except for rock. Most had high levels of substance use associated with sex, except for pop. Country music, almost 65% of the times that you hear about substance use is associated with humor in some way. We don't know what the outcome of that is, but it's an important finding. And as you see, rock songs are not interested in associating popular music substance use with humor. The interesting figure here is that there weren't really statistically significant differences. Only pop did not have any songs that associated substance use with vehicle use, but overall 16%, one in six songs that has substance use is associating it with driving or riding in a vehicle. Rock had a few anti-use messages. It was the only one. There were only a couple songs that were associated with limit setting, both country songs. And no songs were associated with use refusal. When it comes to consequences of use, the mental, physical, and legal consequences were more often negative than positive. And you can see for the legal, for example, there were no songs where you actually got a good legal outcome from, you know, no one got out of jail because they were smoking marijuana. But the emotional, social, sexual, and financial consequences were much, much more positive than negative, all highly statistically significant. Overall, almost 70% of the songs had positive net consequences, and around 14% each had neutral and negative consequences. When it comes to all genres, overall, there were around 35 references to substance use per hour, since the average adolescent listens to 2.4 hours of music a day. That's 84 references to substance use that they're hearing every day. If you're just listening to rap music, it would be 104.5 references per per hour, or around 250 references per day for the average adolescent. So the major points are that explicit substance use is seen in around a third of songs. Alcohol and marijuana were the most frequently shown. This differs substantially by genre. The motivations that we see most were peer and social pressure and sex. The associations we saw most were partying and sex. Consequences were positive in the social, sexual, emotional, and financial realms, but often negative in the mental, legal, and physical realms. The volume of exposure is extremely high, as I mentioned, around 84 references per day on average. That's around 30,000 references per year. One clinical implication of that is that I'm going to see these people in my office 1 to 3 times a year, and they're going to have health education regarding substance use around 6 hours a year, and yet they're going to be exposed to 30,000 references per year that give them a totally different picture of what we're going to say. We probably need to understand what it is we're up against and to think about the fact that genre is, you know, likely to be something that we want to think about. Should we fight fire with fire and just try to, have as many anti-substance use messages as we're going to hear pro-substance use messages? Probably not. Another potential solution is this idea of media literacy, teaching young people to analyze and evaluate these messages for themselves, realize the difference between that they're highly constructed and the difference between the representation and the reality of the situation, so that maybe giving that, empowering them in that way, they might be less likely to just assume those messages at face value. The real question, though, is does this exposure lead to use? And this study does not tell us anything about that. All it tells us is that this is present. This was a content analysis. This is the next step for us. But it's important to think about this, because the story for media smoking was that everyone said, oh no, you know, substance use doesn't really, and you know, if they smoke in movies, that doesn't really do anything. Well, we now know it's probably the strongest risk factor for adolescent smoking. So we need to think about this. Now, music lacks the visual element of film, but the exposure is larger, and it's very related to personal identity. So I think this is a really important place to go in terms of our next steps. The consequences were positive in the social, sexual, emotional, financial realms. And think about that. Those are the things that adolescents care about. Do they care about legal, physical consequences? Not as much. And yet that's what we're emphasizing in our substance abuse education. Maybe we should be rebutting those other consequences. This was limited in that it was just a content analysis. It was 1 year of songs. There's subjectivity of judging these variables, but that's why we use such a complex methodology, and we did not examine the visual elements of these songs. As I mentioned, the future direction is really to explore associations between exposure and these various health behaviors. Thank you.